It has become very rare to have English speaking episodes because, as you know, How to Freizeit Park Abroad does not longer exist. But there are some occasions where it is necessary to speak English. So this will be an all English episode, just to warn you before we start ahead. And this will be also a very interesting episode because my today's guest is from the immersive life experience business. Who it is and what he does, you will find out in a minute. But first, welcome to How to Freizeit Park, the business podcast for leisure makers. My name is Stefan Burian. I'm a freelancing consultant for operations, HR, and guest experience for leisure attractions of any kind and size. And my today's guest is create one of the most any kind attractions there is. It is a small and, I wouldn't say experimental experience, but it is very unique in its game mechanics, in how the story is built, how the world has been built. And it is now, or it has been closed a couple of weeks ago, because they are moving now from one location to another. They have been in, I would say, like an industrial area a little bit outside of London, and now they move into a mall in London, a Westfield mall. And my today's guest is Nick Moran. He is the owner, founder, and creator of Phantom Peak, one of the most unique things I've ever done. And just to give you a heads up, this interview is is completely different, and Nick has been an absolute delight. So I wish you good luck, all the best, enjoy. So Nick, the first question is, I have to all people who do live experiences and immersive experiences, how would you describe your attraction?
Phantom Peak is an open world experience, a little bit like an open world video game in real life. People come to this strange, unusual, fictional town, and they roam around solving trails, which are sort of interactive quests, a little bit like side quests in like a video game. There are like lots of different townsfolk. Each of the townsfolk have problems, and it's up to you as kind of a tourist to Phantom Peak to help them, hinder them, or harm them in various different ways along these various different stories. It is unusual in the immersive space because Phantom Peak is a comedy show. It's like about, it's fun, it's frothy, it's playful, it's about having a sense of humor. It's about like getting into ridiculous situations with ridiculous characters and ridiculous people. And then Phantom Peak, you know, every 4 months, Phantom Peak's stories change as there's a time jump within the town. And then there's a whole new collection of stories. And the time moves forward season by season, time by time. Characters come, characters grow, characters change, characters leave, characters arrive. But Phantom Peak is meant to feel like this ever-changing world, this ever-changing place that you visit just for a while, then you leave. And then when you come back, you do something different, and you experience something different, and you see a place change with the life that you have as well.
Gee, that is a pretty darn concrete description of your attraction. It sounds a little bit like a TV show.
That is purposeful. It's meant to feel like a real life Netflix show. It's meant to have that sense of, that sense of episodic storytelling. There's a lot of talk about storytelling in the immersive and attraction space. Phantom Peak is literally about storytelling. It is about stories. And that's why people come back, is they want to see what happens next. They want to see what's happened to this character next. They want to understand, you know, they get a sense of another story or trail or experience along the way. So it is kind of always about that, always about having people be part of this world and be part of a Netflix show where it's all about you. That's kind of what it's always been.
And what I'm interested most is in, how does your target group work with your attraction? Because I'm always thinking about our German market, which is Very conservative. We are not very playful, or we're not really don't have any courage to try really expressive or immersive things, because our target audience is mainly just entertain me. I'm not here to entertain you. I'm the one who has to be entertained. And once you are stepping just a single step in Phantom Peak, you are in the middle of the thing and you are part of it. And that's what was my experience for, I think, 5 years ago when I was there for the very first time. It's true immersive, because you are in it and you have no escape or whatsoever, so you have to take part, and it's very easy to take part. But I could believe that once the first weeks, when you start such a broad life experience, it might be difficult for the first visitors to understand what's happening.
Yes, I do understand that, and I think there always is a reticence to believe that people will play. But people, most people, even if they're conservative, they are still underneath, you know, relatively fun people. Even people who you aren't think, they'll still have a laugh, they'll still have a joke, they'll still have some time at work, they'll smile, they'll engage with their mates, their friends, their pals, their bros, their buddies in various different ways to make them have fun during the day. And people at work and all these kind of situations, they're always, they're laughing, they're smiling. Because ultimately, play is how we interact and create bonds with people. But Phantom Peak is designed to take a lot of that fear out of the equation. Because, of course, throughout Phantom Peak, you'll have your Jone Assist, which is your app that guides you around town and tells you what to do. Most people, when they don't want to play, or when they're afraid, or when they don't know what to do in something new, it's because they don't know what the rules are. Whereas Phantom Peak, the app tells you where you should be going and how you should be doing at all times. So there's never that sense of, should I really go and talk to this person? No, it says go and talk to this person. I know what I have to do. And acts as kind of a shield. And that makes people who wouldn't play, wouldn't have fun, and who probably are great fun in their, you know, or even like likable and charming in their everyday life, and, you know, care really a lot about the people around them and things like that. And, you know, the app makes them a little bit more comfortable to be the person that they actually are normally. We don't ask anything of them. We don't ask them to assume a character. We don't ask them to do all that. You are just you, and you're in another place. You're just a tourist visiting a town. And by doing that, what that does, it breaks down a lot of barriers and provides people comfort. And when people are comfortable, they feel comfortable to relax. And if they feel comfortable to relax, they feel comfortable to play. And they feel comfortable to play, they will smile and they will joke and they will be at their best. And that's what it's about.
Okay, that sounds pretty simple when you explain it like that, because is it maybe a challenge to explain your product, which is hard to explain, and resolving this problem by keeping it as simple as possible without any huge backstory before you enter such an experience?
Yes, we are like, you do not need, it's really a sense, like I love LARPs, right? LARPs are great, and there's nothing against LARPs. LARPs are for people who love that level of detail.
Yeah.
And there is, like, you know, on the side of scale, 10% of people love that. They want to read every detail. They want to understand it. They care about that. And there is that within the world of Phantom Peak. But whenever we design a trail of Phantom Peak, we always have in mind, this could be and probably will likely be someone's first to visit Phantom Peak, maybe their only ever visit. You should have everything explained to you that you ever should know at the beginning of the trail, and then we should assume that that's it. So, like, by not over dumping on lore or making it too complicated and things like that, but allowing a depth to the world, what we do is we make it so it, you know, again, it's not intimidating. There's not the sense of, like, what if I don't know, will I be caught out? Phantom Peak doesn't catch you out, doesn't expect anything. And also, I'm kind of from an escape room background. And one of the things with escape rooms is that there's no outside knowledge is needed in order to proceed. And in Phantom Peak, we've flipped it the other way. No internal knowledge is needed to proceed. You don't need anything to know, any piece of knowledge about the world of Phantom Peak in order to exist within it, in order to have fun.
Yes, I can agree to that. Especially the point about the lore, which I found very complicated when we have, for example, in theme parks, huge attractions with heavy storytelling. You have so much lore and they rely on we need to tell the story no matter what, and they try to, I don't know, they overcomplicate things sometimes. And what I found pretty easy was when we stepped into Phantom Peak for the very first time, it was easy going. It was not dropped something on my head and we need to study the whole thing. We can just participate in our own way and tempo.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of mistakes that I think. Firstly, like I have opinions on that, which are that people who often design rides think they're designing an opera, and they are designing a ride. You are not designing an opera. This is not the Ring Cycle. Like, people are sitting in a queue. You know what they want to know? They want to know, why am I there? What's going to happen? That's all they care about. You've got two sentences of emotional depth to give people. And I think, okay, there are complicated rides where you can tell more complicated stories, but there are like two of them in the world that could do that. Most things, structure is content. No, the structure of the experience is, like a ride is mostly you're going around on a car on a track, and you don't have that much time to do that. Like, again, it's that thing of like, I think what there is there's an insecurity somehow, sometimes within, like, especially pitch decks for like trying to build stuff and trying to elevate it by doing lots of complex things. But some of the best experience I've ever had, that they just kept it simple. You're going in a you're in a spooky place and you do a spooky thing. Great, I know how I'm supposed to feel. I am excited. Stuff will happen. We don't have to. A lack of story is not a lack of polish or a lack of detail. It's sometimes pulling back is better than pulling forward. That's something that I think.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. It's not an opera. Yeah, sometimes
Yeah, it's not an opera.
and what you said is of the depth is yeah, there's so many levels of storytelling and you can go such levels deep that the audience can understand it. I mean, you can always put up additional layers, but does it do any purpose to your ride or the experience of the guests?
No, and I think often there's a. I always think that you've got to have a very, players and customers should be able to feel the story more than they should have to understand the story. Comprehension is an upper brain activity where you're digesting information and reducing it to emotional output. You should be able to understand the basic beats of a story just by living through it, even if you only get the kind of like the feelings and movements of it, especially within a live setting. Because again, this is interactive entertainment in some way, shape, or form. It's not a movie. In a movie, I can sit down and I can digest it with my mind, and then it's the emotions spit out into my soul. Whereas with a theme park ride or a theme or an interactive attraction or an immersive experience, I might be looking at the floor the whole time because I like the way that it looks. You don't even know what people are looking at because you don't control my face, and which is what you do with a piece of theater, with a theater show or something like that. So I think it's also within the space is you have to assume that no one's listening, no one's watching, no one's taking control, no one reads anything, and they're tired and their legs hurt and they're sick of walking around. And that's your customer. And you've got to make them happy and make them understand what's going on.
And making them understand is also important when you talk about game mechanics, and that's what I found very interesting is again how simple it was solved at your place. When I think about, I don't know, challenge rooms, for example, it's heavy tech, it's complicated as fuck. When you talk about I don't know, escape rooms, sometimes often also very tech heavy, but it was just my mobile phone. The what was it called?
Genesis.
The Jonah Assist, and this is your guide through the whole storyline, and it works. It just basically works. Why? And was it on the a solution on the very first try, or was it like the second or third round of trying to figure out how get the people to interact with your stuff?
Always absolutely essential from the word go. Knew the Genesis was going to be there. Like, that was always part of the design. Two things. One, the Genesis divides everyone on different trails at the beginning. So you all divide upon different stories, And that really helps the flow of it. And also helps like the town feeling alive. If 400 people are there, like everyone's kind of doing different things. It feels alive. You're seeing little glimpses of something that you might see on another trail. It makes it feel like it's a real world. If 400 people are all doing the same thing, you're going to get is cues. So what it does, it structurally changes the experience and makes it kind of work. That's one of the things that's really, really important. Secondly, I've been to a lot of open world experiences across my time. You know, like I'm sure you have. We've been to everything, right? And I am tenacious and I'll follow something through to its conclusion. But the average person, they get lost really easily. And that's not because they're stupid, right? It's because they're just like, oh, I'm not sure what I should be doing. And I don't feel comfortable pushing or asking for help because I don't look stupid, you know? And by having something which is your simple guide, you can trust it. It can give you hints when you need it. You know when you've done something right. It checks you. Then throughout the whole experience, you never feel lost. You never feel confused. You never feel alone. And I think that by doing that, we've solved a lot of problems. We've made people more comfortable, made people more happy. And that's always that's the most essential thing that we've done. And like Joan Assist is the key thing that makes Phantom Peak work. It provides people amongst various stories. It keeps people thinking, and it keeps it simple. You don't need complicated tech. We are language machines. Create a linguistic way of people understanding what's going on.
Yeah. And how important was it for you to have like a proper payoff at the end of each trail? Because there could be like a point system. There could be like, I don't know, a fake currency to collect. Or what you have done is pretty easy. Just having a sort of card, a collective card at the end. Why that? Why not going all the way up and say, earn your money, spend it in the town?
Because I don't want this to be a competitive thing. Like, this is not a competitive socializing experience. Here is a memento from the story you've done. You've done it. You've achieved it. It's a nice little button on the end of the story. It's like, all it is tying up the thing you've done with a bow. And also, like, showing, oh, I've done story 1 of 16. You know what I mean? Or I've done story 5 of 16. You know, not 60, we don't do 16 trails anymore a season, Jesus. But we now do 10 a season. What it allows is people to understand that their story is over and get something for it. It's more like an achievement being unlocked. That's how I think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes absolutely sense. So it's more like really the live video game experience with the achievement, which you can show up as a point of, I don't know, like a accomplishment.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So like rather than, I also like, I want people to take their time. If a trail generally takes between 40 and 60 minutes, like generally, and over the course of a show, people do 3, 2, up to them. There should be no reward for doing it quicker or doing it slower. If you wanted to just like stay and fish passports out of a lake for 2 hours and play all our different games, you can do that. It's your choice. And there's no right or wrong. By making like a currency element, what it does, it means that like by rushing it, you're doing better. No, that's not the Phantom Peak way. Your time, your experience, your choice, your way.
You said before that you have a escape room background. Mm-hmm. How difficult was it to leave the escape room world and do something completely different?
Incredibly easy. I didn't start off as a baby in the escape room world. I started off, sure. So I did other things beforehand.
You had a proper life before.
I had a life before. Escape rooms are a design and build structure that I'm very excited by and I love very much, and that there are plenty of incredible, brilliant creators around the world still pushing the medium forward in a way that someone like me probably never could. You know, people like Chris Latner and Jonathan Driscoll and all these incredible like world talents. And for me, that it depends, like, what are you at your highest aspiration? What is the thing that you know you are? And before coming to escape rooms, I was a freelance writer. That's what I did. I was a writer. I produced like freelance script stuff. I did a lot of stuff for PlayStation, did a lot of stuff for like other various different companies. And I produced a lot of different other types of experiences. And the thing I'd always wanted to produce is I wanted to create a place people could stay for a really long time with lots of different stories. And that was something I always wanted to do. And I wanted to know how to crack that experiential model, because partly, like, not just like commercial ends, of course, making money is required in order to exist and make things and make more things. Sure. But in order to make the type of experience that I wanted to exist. Escape rooms, plenty of them out there. They exist and they will continue to be great. Whether I need to or not, but no one had really tried to do something like Phantom Peak. And I really wanted to, because I believed people would like it and I believed it would work. And also I have a very high appetite for risk. So
that would have been my follow-up question from a scale from 1 to 10. How high was your stress level during the planning and construction phase?
Nothing. I did that. Not that high. 7. Operating a business is more stressful than starting it. Starting something is easy. You just have to build it, sell tickets. It feels great at the beginning. What's hard is like year two, when, you're like, okay, I need to reinvent my marketing engine, blah, 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 blah. Year one is joy to despair. Year two is despair to stability. Year three is stability increasing, and year four is death. No, not really. Yeah, year four is hopefully continues to go. I've launched many products across my life, and I love a build. I love a launch. It's the best part of anything, because you're unencumbered by what might be, and you can only feel positives. You believe, and you have, in order to build something really cool, you have to believe fully in it. And that's like your time of peak self-delusion. And that's always the best time. So the stress levels is always offset by the self-delusion. And in fact, it was a joy to open, absolutely joy. I look back at that time fondly. Yeah, I loved it.
But when you think back to your opening phase and in the very first weeks, what has been your biggest challenge you had to overcome to make it really, really work?
I think a lot of it was just like how many trails should there be? How many actors should there be? How many interactions should there be? How many tech points should there be? Like a lot of it was we got a lot of the principles right and a lot of the ingredients right, but not necessarily the right quantities of ingredients, if you get me. So it's kind of like tweaking rather than like, we were like, the cake is good, but it's not yet great. And I think that's been like the refining and shaving off and polishing of it over the last couple of years has been. I'll start that sentence again. The polishing and refining and honing of it after the last 3 years has been absolutely key. And that's been the learning. And it's still yet to be perfected, because I don't believe in perfection. It's not possible. But you have to keep going. And if I'm at 85% of where I want it to be, it'll be another year and I get to 87 and I get to 89, and one day you might get into the 90s, but to believe that you could 100% perfect anything is delusional.
It is. I think that it was one of my most interesting questions I had during an interview for a job. What's more important to you, to be perfect or to be on time? And I said immediately, well, on time, because I can't measure perfect. What is perfect? Your perfect is different from mine. But on time, I have a deadline. I have an opening date, which I have already announced. So this is my point I have to meet. But I can't make it perfect for everybody, because I don't know what perfect for everybody means.
Totally correct. Perfect for a reason is an impossibility. But striving for perfection and knowing you can't make it is part of the journey of creation, I think.
Yeah, it is. And what you've done, I was following you afterwards on social media because I hadn't had the chance to come back yet. But you did a lot of changes. You also expanded your set and your town. What was the thing that you said, all right, that was a nice start, but we need to change it completely? Like, for example, I saw that you removed the blimp from the indoor section, right?
Yes, well, we'd always sort of run out of time a bit during the opening of Phantom Peak, and we wanted to have more of it built inside. So we sort of split that across two seasons in terms of the launch of it. So we had the old new town outside, and also we were just coming out of COVID. There's still a lot of anxiety about being indoors. So we were like, look, let's do primary, like 75% outdoor, 25% indoor. And then as we go into the winter, we'll shift that kind of like, so it's 50-50. And I think that was one of these, like the key, that was more, less like a learning and more like the final parts of the plan being enacted. I think the real learnings of honing it really happened probably 2023, so after our third season of Phantom Peak, when we'd had a little bit of a pause and we got to like work out what we're doing and like hone it down over a year or two. And that was kind of like, that was when we really like hit our stride in terms of knowing what we wanted to do.
Yeah. And now Phantom Peak has done its final season on its original place, and now you are moving to a new location. Why?
Yes. Well, do you want the exciting reason or the true reason? The exciting reason is because obviously Westfield Stratford, where our new thing is like the biggest mall in Europe, a great home Phantom Peak. It's going to be really cool. It's going to be a better set, a chance to make it everything you ever wanted it to be in terms of like up the design, up the quality, all this kind of stuff. Just being able to like, small things, some rooms too small, some rooms too big, just all these like tiny tweaks that to the outside thing would like not really matter, but you know, they all do add up. But the real reason, obviously the primary reason, is the building was being demolished. And
oh,
so
really?
Yeah, we didn't really have any choice. It's becoming student accommodation. So it wasn't like we could stay there, but also we always knew it was a temporary venue. I'm always looking for that next great home. And we want to be somewhere that was like killer. And Westfield Stratford is an absolutely fantastic location. We're really, really excited about it. The Westfield guys are so enthusiastic. They've come to Phantom Peak loads, brought their families, brought their mates, you know. So it is about making something that is everything we ever wanted it to be. Not necessarily from a changing of the raw product, but simply from being able to do the build perfectly in a way that like the first one was just like a sort of, it was something we learned as we went forward, and just being able to have that like second go at it is such a privilege. Very excited by it.
Yeah. And I find it quite exciting from a strategic point of view, because malls are always in trouble. They have now this huge problem that we have a consumer crisis. People are not spending a lot of money in the malls, and especially when you look here into the German malls, there's so much empty room in most of the malls, and everybody is trying to figure it out. What could we do? So the first thing would do maybe bring into some life into your rooms with such experiences like yours. And when I look now to London, it seems pretty obvious that it should be also maybe like a handshake situation, because you are reviving the space. And I think that it's the other Westfield Mall in London where Wake the Tiger will take place this year as well. So it seems like there's something going on your market right now.
Yes, and I think it's kind of a little bit proof that like Westfield, who are like, they're the premium mall operator in the UK, like the top of the market. They're very clever, and they kind of see trends a little bit before other people. Mm-hmm. And I think they've grabbed us and Wake the Tiger and been like, you guys are the ones, because they think we're the guys to partner with. And Wake the Tiger are great, and they're really nice guys, and they're friends of ours. And we're really excited to be able, you know, they're in the West London Westfield, we're in the East London Westfield, so we kind of straddle the city, which is kind of fun. But we're getting, you know, there's lots of plans of like how we can like partner with them in various different ways, and like, you know, a lot of mall operators understand there's a problem, and very few are actually doing anything about it. And I think that Westfield are like ahead of the curve, and you're going to see this happen in lots of different malls across the country. And it's going to be a big change in consumer behavior, because everything will, experiential is moving things. I mean, I can't, like, you know, all my clothes I bought online, my watch I bought online, this microphone I bought online. When did I last go to a shop? Apart from like, I don't, who cares? Shops are rubbish, you know? Shops are terrible, and everyone in them, like, you know, everyone knows they're terrible. They're just empty, desolate wastelands. Like, screw shops. Make things that people care about and bring people emotions and joy. That's my that, and I think that like all these big malls are seeing that as well.
So I already got a title for this episode: Screw Malls or Screw Shops.
No, not screw malls. Nothing wrong with malls.
Excuse me. but I totally agree with you, because I'm always trying to figure out. I mean, it is a rental company in the end of the day, so they are just renting spaces and they don't care where the money comes from. But it does matter if you have quality time, if you have a huge long dwell time in your mall, so the people will spend automatically. And again, that's the thing we see in Germany right now. They're trying to, but not have the courage right now to really go into it, as we see now in London. So do you see there might be a huge market for experiential things in the next couple of years, especially in Europe?
The European mainland immersive and experiential market is, I mean, like, London is a little bit ahead, you know, a little bit ahead on that way, in terms of like, there just is a more, like, I think because of London's sort of like really long theatrical tradition, and you know, it just has a tiny bit of an edge. So I think if we see London as kind of the test bed, then I think, you know, that thing is going to really, really, really spread out from there. But the only way we get there is by seeing a lot more capital invested in the space. Immersive and experiential is still underinvested in and under-indexed in terms of capital deployment. And I think until we see a lot of sea change from, you know, like private equity and like traditional investors and family offices willing to invest into experiential entertainment. The problem is also there's a lot of like really absolutely terrible immersive stuff out there. Immersive, unquote, immersive stuff, which are like war crimes, and the people should go to jail who make them. And like the immersive Van Gogh, not immersive, just rubbish, just tap dancing on the grave of an artist. Every single person who involved in immersive Van Gogh, they should get into the grave with Van Gogh, cut off their ear as well. They should be dead. And because, you know,
at least by punished by cutting off an ear.
No, that is absolute. That is, you are too gentle. The whole head, decapitate. They have committed a sin against the sector, and they have made bad stuff, and they devalued the name immersive. But luckily in London, because of immersive was bigger before that came, you know, like that, it hasn't changed it. But not other markets, that's the first immersive stuff that people have ever been to, and it was really bad. And I think that's also the problem. There's a lot of bad stuff out there, and it needs to go, it needs to die, and bigger and better operators who make stuff that can be, rather than 50,000 square foot, they can be 15,000 square foot and create meaningful experiences. Those people need to build experiences, they need to have capital behind them, and they need to have the landscape support them, rather than crap touring stuff. So that's also that's the other enemy here. Crap touring stuff, it is the enemy.
It is, and I always kind of get the chills when I hear the word immersive, because it is really brought down to a very low level of crap. I mean, it is a foot projection room immersive? Technical?
No, it's not.
It's a wrong. No, the answer is no. Are you into it? The answer is no.
The answer is no. You know, for a long while, people have said, I've recently realized that people have said, but who gets to decide who what is immersive and what is not? And I have decided it's me. I am the person who decides what is immersive and what is not, and no one else. And I get to decide, and what I say goes across the world. Because someone has to do something, and I've decided I'm going to do it. So you can just ask me questions. Is a projection show immersive? No, it is not. It is going to the cinema immersive? No, that's just a projection on one wall. Four walls doesn't make it any more immersive. So, like, you know, I'm going to sort it all out. Don't worry. But, you know, those people who say immersive, you know, like, a projection show is not immersive, it is It is a museum piece. It is a good museum piece. Sometimes it's a great museum piece. But, you know, for example, Team Lab is immersive because it's interactive. Yeah. It's really good. And people who say, oh, it's kind of like Team Lab, but without all the good thing, with all the good things taken out. No, it's not. Team Lab are world class. You know, what it needs to be is like, we need to, you know, and those kind of bad projection shows that are all wobbly Van Gogh, wobbly Monet, wobbly Klimt, you know, they're just... They're using the word immersive as a way to shift a ticket and create a customer who hates themselves. And that is something that I think, again, we've got The Hague there, and it's just not doing enough for war crimes right now. We could do quite a lot with it. I'm happy to be judge, jury, you know what, executioner. I'll decapitate them if needs to be. Someone's got to.
Oh, right. Okay. I see. I tickled a nerve there somewhere in you. And I agree with you. I mean, it's the same thing we have with theme parks. When we describe something as something that's not what it is, people mm-hmm. will take this word and go around and say it is that what they say, but it's just a marketing buzzword for describing something that is not the product you would like to have, because immersion is so much more. It's so much more organization, planning, more storytelling, more emotion. I don't get any emotions in a projection exhibition whatsoever. I get the emotion of, okay, where's the next exit? Because I've seen it several thousand times, because it's always the same. Mm-hmm. But talking about always the same, before you start again another rant about immersive projection stuff, I see you're already
about I'm done. It's okay. I'm gonna sort it all out. Don't worry.
Okay. what's next for you? Because when you moved to Phantom Peak, you said again you tried new things. You have new things in your cupboard. Is it a completely new experience in the Westfield Mall, or is it just an enhanced experience from the previous location, or is it where you have a completely fresh new start?
It's an enhanced experience in a new location. It's sort of bigger, better, bolder. Obviously, a new collection of new stories, new tech. It's going to be everything we always wanted to make Phantom Peak is. It's going to be. If you've been to Phantom Peak before, this is Phantom Peak on the steroids. It's the Phantom Peak like of your dreams. It is going to be absolutely insane. It's going to be so absolute. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be delightful. It's going to be just, I can't tell you how good it's going to be. I'm very, very excited. The designs are so exciting. So, and there's going to be nothing like it anywhere in the world. I can promise you that. And the hope is after we do this, you know, Phantom Peak's going to go other places, you know, not touring, and, you know, as a touring projection show, no promises there. We want to build other attractions in other places. We're looking at Europe, we're looking at Australia, we're looking at America, we're looking all around the world at places we can take Phantom Peak next. And that's what the goal is to bring Phantom Peak, which we think is something that gives people joy, gives people meaning, gives people hope, is a hopeful, positive place. People get to escape their troubles in a complex and fearful world and feel positive and happy and engaged. And, you know, it's like there's a world which respects them. You know, we want to bring that to lots of different places across the world and, you know, have more and more people experiencing the joy of Phantom Peak. And that's what we're really proud of. And that's what I think, again, is the privilege of making incredible live entertainment, is that you get to make more people happy. And, you know, I want to make people happy and to make people have a great value ticket, because Phantom Peak is a great value ticket for what it is, in a time that's challenging, that makes them, their family and their friends feel valued.
Yeah, and makes it worthwhile, because you spend a lot of money, you spend a lot of your own free time. And when you go out of your experience and you really had that chance to completely be immersed and have that escapism of just forgetting your just normal boring day and dive into something completely different, I think that's the biggest payoff you can have with your attraction. And that's, I have to really point out, is what I had, because I hadn't had any sense of what is Phantom Peak 4 years ago. And I was so amazed. I was so joyful afterwards, because I came out of my comfort zone on so many points with your staff, because your actors are so well trained, absolutely weird, very lovable, and the point, the amount of interaction you can have in an attraction, I've never experienced that before. So how difficult is it to train your staff on that level that you can say, okay, this is what I want to have out of that character?
Luckily, we've had a good group of people stay with us a lot of the time, and they kind of grow. We've become better at finding the right kind of character with this kind of little bit like a kind of ingredient that's a sort of a spark of like joy that they have within them that they just desperately want to bring to the world. But like hiring, like finding great improvisers, finding great people who like relish interaction. There are loads of funny people in this world who are desperate to have a job which allows them to be funny. And Phantom Peak is a place where, like, you go for it. You go for it. We believe in you. And that is the main thing. And the rest of it is hire nice, funny, charming, upbeat people. And strangely enough, they'll give other people a nice, funny, charming, upbeat time. And that was, and that's the secret ingredient. And of course, like, other parts of it, but that is the core part of it, you know. Loads of key players, people like, you know, I've caught some actors there, people like Mandy, who've been here with us since day one, who's was sitting, I think, Mary Pocket in the final season. She's just a joy to be around. And that is across all her characters. She's not just a great actor, she's just a joy to be around. And that comes off is like, and I would say, if you want people to that are fun and a joy to be with, don't hire drags. People who are a drag in their main life, strangely enough, they're an absolute drag when they're in performance as well.
Yeah, I think what I'm seeing here is it's such an open space on some point, because you have not just the people coming to you as a customer, as a guest, as a tourist, as you said, but also the people that come to you and work with you and bring that experience to life. I mean, if you can just behave different, or maybe you have, I don't know, something in your character that you want to bring out, that's your place to be.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And Nick, one last thing. When you could wish, except of erasing the word immersive and, I don't know, place it
I don't
by.
I don't want to I don't want to erase it. I don't want to raise some people. It's a whole murder thing. Don't
Jesus
worry. No, I'm
Christ,
joking,
that
joking, joking,
is.
joking. Just erase them from history, you know. But don't worry, carry on.
If okay, the question is, if you had a time machine, you could travel back in time, who would it be? No,
What,
no, no,
like,
no,
what,
no,
to
no,
erase
no.
some history? I mean, there's like, where do we start? Like, there are so many terrible people across history. But no, what's the
No,
actual question?
I really forgot my question I had in mind right now because I'm off now. What was it? Oh yeah. If you had a magic hat, no budget, no time limitations whatsoever, Phantom Peak is running, is all over the world, what would be the experience you would love to create to bring joy and story to people?
I would love to make Phantom Peak on a scale like Phantom Peak is like 25,000 square foot, right? I'd love to make a 150,000 square foot Phantom Peak, a proper actual town with like little mini trains, things like that, rides, all this kind of stuff. Still with that same sense of joy and exploration and discovery underneath, and a sense of exploration. But I think to be able to build it on a scale that it feels like not just a small town you're visiting, like an actual like large town or a city. It is, yeah. It's that. I mean, that's the dream. And look, you know, I'm still relatively young in the grand scheme of things. I'm still in my 30s for another 9 months.
Good luck.
Thank you.
I
I
passed
hear
that
that.
point already.
You're over the hill. I respect it. Don't worry. I'm looking to get down those slopes myself, and I'm going to ski right down all the way to the grave. So I can't even ski. I've got very flat feet. It's really painful. Tried snowboarding, doesn't work either. But yeah,
Maybe a
so
sleigh.
I could. It's true. Yeah, I could try a sleigh. Feels a bit. Sort of feels a bit. I guess a bit Father Christmas of me, a bit Santa-y. And
It
you know
doesn't
what? I'm
have the
not that
impact.
old.
If you ski down to your grave, it looks more efficient and cool than on a sleigh.
On a sleigh is a little regal. I think someone's sleighing to their grave. They've already given up. exactly. That feels like, also, it feels kind of passive to go on a sleigh, because really the sleigh's doing the work, whereas you're snowboarding or skiing, there's still some sort of core going on, and that helps the abs. And I really want to look taut when I'm sitting there ripped in my coffin. I think there was a question, but I've lost it. What was it again?
you were talking about scaling up to having a proper town in Phantom Peak. And I'm from an operational point of view, or that's my backstory from theme parks and stuff. And the first thing comes to my mind, because I'm a huge critic, because I'm operations, where, when you scale it up, might there be a point where you would say, okay, that is the maximum I could bring Phantom Peak to a scale before I lose any of its detail and lore?
Yes, there absolutely is a point. I think I don't know what that point is, and I'll have to do the thinking on it. I reckon, so Phantom Peak again is like 25,000 to 35,000 square foot right now, or about, you know, 2,700 square meters ish. So, and I think that once you get above 70,000, you know, 7,000 square meters, like, unless you are really good, you will, like, the sense of place will dissolve. Because the problem is that, like, the bigger you get, it's not just about, like, the build, like, the detail. I'm never worried about the detail. Like, that doesn't worry me. I'm on top of the detail of things like that. What worries about me is that, like, the space that you find, you'll be, like, you'll see the edges of the space more. Do you get what I mean? In a small space, it's easy for you to see mostly the space. Whereas in your kind of a larger town, you've got a lot of edge. You've got a lot of, like, looking at large buildings or things like that. It just might not feel as real. And to find an internal space, it might start to feel weird. So, yeah, I mean, there is a point that scaling up just won't work anymore. But you know what? What a lovely problem to have that one day. If I had that problem, I'll be really happy. You know, again, to have the problem that I've got to spend so much money that I have to work out how to scale up to a large space. I'm not there. I'm really far away from that. It'd be lovely to be there one day. It's a dream.
And talking about dreams, one dream that will be becoming real very soon is Phantom Peak 2.0. When will it be open?
It'll be open soon. I'm not going to say.
All right.
Because my marketing person would slap me around the ears.
Okay, so we will see it, I believe, anyway, on social media, LinkedIn, whatsoever. Just have an eye on it, and I can just underline, people, if you haven't been to Phantom Peak and you want to see what it is and how does it feel and how does it play and how does it work, go there. It will be open some point this year. Hopefully, when the IAPA Expo Europe is in London this year in September, maybe.
You're not gonna get anything out of me. Look, I would love it to be open. End of sentence. So there we go.
All right. No worries. I'm not pushing you anymore.
It'll be open as soon as we can. That's one thing I can say. It's just, it's a big complex. It's a complex build, and so who knows? I know.
Fair enough. And if you push something, it might happen that it's getting at the end a projection show, and that's not going to happen.
No, I'll be dead if that happens. I'll have gone. I'll be slaying right down to my grave, and I'll be doing crunches along the way to make up the fact my core isn't working. So I can end up looking ripped post death.
But it was so lovely to have you here talking about your product, which I really adore, and I wish you all the best and best of luck with your new opening, and having you here alive, not on a sleigh going downhill. I see you there with lots of passion in your eyes when you speak about immersive experiences, and let's go out here and say slay the projection mapping shows, and all the best for all the real immersive attractions out there.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I hope I did not raise or have risen the expectations too high. And I hope you really did enjoy this small chat with Nick. I have a lot of respect for what he does and how he sees things. I mean, okay, there are certain things I would say I might see differently. I usually have my own strong opinions, but yep, that was quite different today. But anyway, it was an absolute delight. He was an amazing guest. So Nick, thank you so much for having you as a guest on my show. And if you want to visit Phantom Peak, maybe, well, somewhere during this year, go to London, visit, enjoy it, and really get amazed. I had a blast a couple of years ago during the Expo Euro IAPA trade show. And if you want to find out more about Nick Moran and Phantom Peak, have a look into the show notes. And if you want to know more about myself, my services, visit me on my website, www.stefanburian.com, or just try to get in touch with me via email, contact@stefanburian.com. And if you want to find out more, have a look into the show notes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.